Welcome to this edition of When the Biomass Hits the Wind Turbine, a discussion of sustainable living and what that means to you and me. I'm Jay Warmke.
I'm Annie Warmke.
And today we have a personal account of creating a small creamery, or I'm just living the dream, baby.
You know?
Do you ever hear that when you go in, you know, you say how are things going and people always say I'm living the dream?
If they say usually, baby, I stop listening.
All right. Well, that must just be me.
I don't want to be called baby by anybody. Right. It's insulting.
But that I'm living the dream always comes across to me as a bit cynical because they're really not. But today, hopefully, we're going to be speaking with Celeste Nolan of Laurel Valley Creamery in Gallipolis, Ohio. And
I think it's pronounced Gallipolis.
Not around that area. Celeste, how do you pronounce it, Dunn?
So, come on. I say Gallipolis, but
Gallipolis
is
it's
also
French, en français. Gallipolis.
Yes, it's very accepted.
Yes.
Gallipolis.
Yeah. That I hear a lot on the,
That's because he was from Athens. He can't help himself. He's a hick.
Right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. So tell us a little bit about what you do and how you got to where you are today. Creameries are not something we think about as a normal, everyday occupation.
Thank you. So what I do, my family and I, we operate a small dairy farm in Gallia County. We milk about 20 cows, and we take all of the milk from those cows and turn it into cheese. We distribute that cheese all within 100 miles of our home, and we support our family that way.
That's cool. Milking 20 cows, though, that doesn't seem like a small dairy farm.
Well, compared to others, I suspect it is.
Well, in
comparatively,
the
exactly.
Corporate world, but
we're classified by the state, or we're a farmstead creamery, so that means that we make the cheese the same place the milk is produced. And based on our volume, we're a medium-sized creamery in the state. But as far as dairies, I don't have the actual facts, but we're one of the smaller dairies in the state. 20 cows is. Unless you're doing some value-added process to the milk, there's not any way to make a living milking 20 cows and just selling your milk as like commodity milk.
So do you actually name your cows?
Yeah, some of them.
There you go. That's probably the way you distinguish a large dairy. If you know that this one's Daisy and that one's Francine, then you're a small dairy.
Right. And I haven't milked regularly for years. I made some babies. And they do that now, along with my husband. They're not babies anymore. But I created
some. Oh, you mean human babies?
Yeah, I created
I was trying to think, wait, you made some babies. All right, where
I created some humans that are old enough that I see some return on investment there.
Worker slaves. Okay.
Yeah, exactly. So, no, they do the majority of the milking. So I don't know the cows' names, but I know their mom's and their grandma's names currently. Mm-hmm. So, when I come in and milk once a week, I'm like, oh, yeah, that was Cricket's daughter, or you know, this one is Garrison Keeler's daughter, or any number of cows we were milking 10 years ago. I can see the lineage more than I know the current cow's names.
Well, being a cheesemaker, I'm wondering, what do you do with all that whey?
We feed pigs.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
That's mostly what we do with all of it. I take some of it to a couple chefs in Columbus, and they use it for different menu items. But most of it goes to our hogs.
Okay, that's cool.
Yeah.
So the thing that I have to ask is what are a couple of things about living the way you do that got you involved with doing this film? What's the name of the film?
The film is called Farmsteaders. It's going to air on PBS's series POV. It's going to air September 2nd at 10 p.m., and then it'll be available for streaming the whole month of September. The film came about after we started making cheese. We started doing the Athens Farmers Market. So we've been in contact with people here at WOUB, I guess, since. So a student helped us at the market, came to the farm, became our friend, recorded some video for a project she was working on, and then it just kind of evolved from there. She was a good friend who recorded video over the course of 5 years. She'd come and stay at the farm for a week or a couple weeks at a time, different seasons, as her schedule allowed, essentially. And then she would go home and watch over and over and over again those 2 weeks and edit into something that's gorgeous and amazing,
That's great, because it doesn't always turn out like that.
No.
But we always say, as long as they spelled our name right and there's a good, either good footage or a good picture, then it's good
I'll
marketing.
I'll take it, right?
Yeah, that's right.
That's agreeable. That's right.
Do you get the sense that they're portraying your life a bit more glamorously than it feels to live it, or do you think it's pretty accurate?
I think it's very accurate. Mm-hmm. I think it's very accurate from beginning to end. It's nice. It's edited because...
If only we could edit our own lives, right?
Right. So, but I think it takes all of the things that I take for granted, like being on the land, being in the same place every day for, 10, 20 years. It's nice to see someone else's perspective. And it's a good, reminder. It's a good, beautiful reminder of, why you're doing what you're doing. And, yeah. And then to watch other people relate to the film as well is, I don't know, it's just, it's encouraging. And it's like when you get bogged down or when you get like, oh, yeah, what am I doing this for? And then it's like, oh, yeah, this feels better. I'll watch this.
No, I get that because we did a series of films with a group called Stetter.com, like Homesteader or Farmsteader. Mm-hmm. And so after they were edited and they sent them back and we had to do some, voice stuff and everything. And I was just looking at that thinking, wow, does it really look like that?
Yeah.
Wow. That's exactly how I was wanting it. Not their video, but just my life, you know, to reflect that. Like, I seem like I'm so nice and I'm really enthusiastic.
Right?
And even on the bad parts, I'm still saying, well, what about this? And so I totally get that.
It's, yeah.
It's really rewarding to see how somebody else can interpret what you feel and actually get it right.
Right. Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Well, Celeste, now, obviously, you're living on a small, doing a small creamery on a farm. Mm-hmm. What did you do before and what motivated you to jump into that?
Well, I've been doing this for 13 years, mm-hmm. Milking cows and making cheese. So before, and I did it while I was having babies and all of those things. So before, when my husband grew up on the farm that we live on. Mm-hmm. His grandparents operated a dairy farm there from 1947 until 1990. We moved onto the farm in 2000. His papa had passed. His granny was ready to move into town. We bought a small portion of the farm. He was a project engineer for a food manufacturer. We bought a small, 40, well, not small. It's not small at all. But we bought 40 acres with plans to build a house. And granny wanted us to move into her house so she could move to town. So we moved there while she was trying to sell it and showed it a few times, which... created some sentimental feelings in my husband, and he said, no, we can't sell this, we'll just go ahead and figure this out and we'll buy the farm. About a year and a half after that, his job was eliminated, he was displaced, and at that was our catalyst. That was like, well, what are we going to do? Let's make it work right here. And we bought cows and started milking, and that was, I think we were both naive at that point.
Probably was a good thing.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely.
If you knew what was coming, you wouldn't do it.
Exactly. But we bought cows and milked essentially at a loss until we couldn't borrow any more money.
So you were a true farmer.
Right, exactly. and then I've been doing a couple interviews. I like to when I look back at all of this in my rose-colored glasses, I came home from the hospital with my third daughter. She was born prematurely, so I was away from the farm for about 2 months. And I came back, and my husband and my mother-in-law said, so I guess we're going to build a cheese factory. You can make cheese, right? I've got here's the money to do it, and let's get started. And so I started buying equipment, and my husband had all the project engineering. He was able to install all the equipment. He keeps everything running and keeps milk in the tank and just keeps it coming to me. And I just, I turn it into cheese and we get it out the door and off we go.
So when you were a little girl, what did you want to be when you grew up?
I don't know what I was exposed to. When I was in kindergarten, when I was 6 years old, I wanted to be a mail person. I wanted to deliver the mail. But I think it was just like exposure. Then I got to high school and I wanted to be a politician. I wanted to be the president. I wanted to be some, but I didn't know how to achieve a goal. I didn't know how to take steps to set a goal, to define it, to take the steps needed every day to achieve it. I didn't know that until we bought cows, I think, is when I learned to do that. They were ideas, I guess, back then, mm-hmm. or ideas about what I wanted to be or what kind of thing I wanted to do, but they weren't.
So you don't think that any of that influenced where you are today?
The goals I had as a young person? I was so detached from food as a young person. I never considered where any of it came from. It was just something like, and I say that, I mean, my family, they hunted deer, and we ate deer as like our main source of protein. But again, it didn't occur to me that milk came from cows or that there were people right. that worked and did this every day. I was as detached
as everybody is now.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, fortunately, our culture is evolving. And I think when you talk about I started 13 years ago and operated at a loss, what's happened in those 13 years is that the foodie culture has come more and more to the forefront. And so there's a marketplace now, and that makes a big difference in terms of where we are, because we've learned that if we eat what comes out of the grocery store, we aren't going to live to be all that old. So,
well, and also most Americans are not willing or not used to paying the cost of what real, true good food costs. Because
right.
if you say, okay, it costs me this much to produce a pound of cheese, in your instance, that may be much higher than what most Americans are used to paying for cheese, except
Absolutely.
What they're buying is garbage.
Well, because they have a really unsophisticated cheese palate anyway.
Yeah.
There are like four cheeses that Americans eat, and mm-hmm. plus Velveeta, that would be five.
So,
and the people
so
that
what
are
the other two
it?
Other than white and yellow? There's white, yellow, and
Parmesan.
Oh, when you mix the two together.
Wait, Parmesan, and
oh,
it's mostly
cheese.
Shaky and creamy.
No, Parmesan is mostly sawdust, so it's right. not really cheese, but it's called right. cheese. Anyway, mm-hmm. what were you going to say? Okay. Well, let me ask you this. Do you think that you're talking a lot about when the cows came? Do you mm-hmm. think that was the defining moment for you, as I'm going to be the cheesemaker and the artisan person, and I'm going to be able to figure out how to make a living?
I think the cows coming was the defining moment in the fact that I knew I could accomplish something every day. Cheese kind of, I mean, it didn't come easy by any means. I learned a lot from my mistakes, but I don't know if one particular cheese making mistake was the defining moment. It was like a culmination of them all. But it's, no, I don't know. Defining moment is, I don't know if it's broad or narrow. Yeah, I think that first winter milking cows was like, oh, if I can do this, there's probably not anything that I can't do or we can't do. It was more of a we can't do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, that's good. You had a good partner.
Okay, well, let me interrupt here for a second and remind everybody that you are listening to When the Biomass Hits the Wind Turbine with Jay and Annie Warmke. And today we're joined by Celeste Nolan of Laurel Valley Creamery, reminding you that it is indeed the end of the world as we know it.
And thank God.
Thank God. So your world, as you know it, revolves around milking cows and making cheese. Do you find that that kind of sets the tone for your day? You've got to, you know, my vision of this is that you get up early in the morning, you have to milk the cows. In the evening, you've got to milk the cows. Is that a true vision?
That's an accurate representation.
And then
yes.
the rest of the day, you're chasing kids around and telling them to make cheese, right?
Well, yeah. No, the day starts, we move milk every other day, essentially, from one building to another on the farm. But milking happens twice a day. It happens 365 days a year. And I myself am only responsible for it maybe twice a week.
So what time of day do you milk?
So we're going back into school season. So right now we're milking about 9 in the morning
oh, okay.
and then
That's
about 7
horrible.
In the evening. It's not uh-huh. horrible. But now my help is going to go back to school. And so we're going to change the cow's schedule a little bit, and we'll start a little bit earlier and finish a little bit earlier. So everybody's got a good night's rest.
And how many gallons of milk, or do they measure this by weight?
So I measure milk by pounds, by weight. Mm-hmm. There's about 8.5 pounds per gallon of milk. I move about 1,500 pounds every other day, which mm-hmm. I should know. I should be able to break that back down. But each cow is producing about 30 pounds or 5 or 6 gallons of milk a day. And from each gallon of milk, I get about a pound of cheese.
And then do you pasteurize that?
I do both. I make some aged raw milk cheeses along with some fresh pasteurized cheeses as well. Depending on milk volume and then customer desires, that kind of dictates my schedule. It feels like all summer I've just been making fresh cheese.
Yeah, that's good.
Yeah.
That's a good thing. So how do you think the things that you've learned over the last 13 years will influence your life as you age as a woman and a mom and a farmer?
Oh, well, they cement my I guess, confidence in myself that I'm able to do things and able to make a living and support my family with the resources available to me, I guess. So those are, yeah, that's definitely what I took away from that. I was a young person when I started, and I'm also like an uneducated person as well. I have a high school diploma, and
what does that mean, uneducated?
Well, I don't have any formal education, and I guess I'm definitely not uneducated or unlearned. I've learned a lot of things, and I'm capable of learning. But as far as a formal education or maybe like the skills that people think that they need to create a business or to support themselves, those are all, I think, just the ability to be able to learn the things that you need to learn to be successful.
I always think this, what I say is, well, I'm from the School of Hard Knocks, mm-hmm. and I got a PhD in that. But I also think that if we can raise our children and they are at any level reasonable human beings, we could run any business, because it really is about getting everything done on time, making sure everybody has as much as you can give them what they need, mm-hmm. and that is the GDP.
Yeah,
right? Isn't it? Yeah,
The gross happiness factor, right?
That's what I'm going for. So, gross happiness factor. That's how I know if we've succeeded.
Well, first and foremost, your dairy and your creamery is a business, as you've indicated, mm-hmm. and so what are the what are the major perils that you would see? I mean, you're saying it's successful. We're making a living. We're continuing to make you've been at this for, you say, 15 years or so?
13 years.
13, mm-hmm. 14, 15. That's better than most businesses, right? Most businesses fail in the first 5 years. So you're obviously an ongoing, thriving concern. So if you were to counsel someone who wants to go into this, what are those things you got to watch out for? What are the things that you've stumbled over as you go through and come to a solution?
Well, the sustainability issue or the balance issue for me and for my family has been more facing the doing it every day, not mm-hmm. necessarily the economic challenges, the environmental challenges. Those are, I don't know. I mean, they're there, I guess, and they're different things that you deal with. This is the emotional or the commitment challenges that we're going to do this. The six of us are going to do this, or the eight of us are going to do this every day for twice a day forever.
Well, the cows don't care that you don't feel like it.
No, they don't. Right? They don't care
especially
at all.
Especially, or if it's a holiday.
No,
you want to go on vacation. You
with the
leave.
Wind chill at 20
nope.
below. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
No, we know this. I know this
yeah.
as a goat herder.
Right. They don't. Yeah. No, the cows don't care. And nor do the people that buy our cheese.
That's
I mean,
right.
like they care about us. They want to buy. They want to buy cheese. They want to feel connected to us. But they also, like, they're totally sleeping when I'm making cheese. Like,
yeah.
You know,
mm-hmm.
and which is fine. And I'm glad, I guess, that they're able to do that. But that's the challenges that we've faced is the sustainability. How long can we go at this rate, giving it all that we're giving it, if that's sustainable.
Right. Or, and that's what I was saying about, you know, a plan as you age, because there's a toll that it takes on the body, whether it's standing up, making the cheese, or dealing with the animals. Like, for example, I tore the a ligament in my shoulder and from a goat who decided she was going to argue with me, and I argued back, which was stupid on my part, against my rules, actually. But I was just not myself that day, so I decided I could take her on. And anyway, but the reality was that it really impacted how I was thinking then about how I go forward in being a goat herder by myself, because it frankly has been quite painful and limited some of the things that I could do. So I have to acknowledge that as I age, if I want to keep doing what I'm doing, which I definitely do, then how do I influence that? Well, you have unhired help.
She has a herd of replacement workers.
That's right.
Right, but I want them to stay. I want them to want to stay, and yeah. I want to set a good example. Like, this life has
lots of rewards.
Exactly. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Lots of benefits.
Lots of
ways it pays you, and not just for money.
Right.
So what are some other ways that you make a living besides the milk and the cheese? You said you have pigs.
We have pigs, exactly. And then we have a product line, or we make hot dogs out of our pigs. But really, we direct sale all of our cheese, and that's the main source of income on the farm.
Well, how do you deal with them? Not only, it occurred to me when you're talking about butchering pigs and the like, but you have cows. Mm-hmm. They have a finite life,
right,
in producing, but also you've got to deal with sicknesses, you've got to deal with diseases, you've got to deal with end-of-life issues, making decisions. You may desperately love this particular cow, but now she's no longer a good producer. So you have to make some decisions that way. How do you work through those?
Well, I think there was a big like turning point or line that we crossed when we went from hobby farming to making a living from my animals, because mm-hmm. I really depend on the animals as they depend on me,
yeah,
or my family. It's a partnership.
Yeah.
We all work together. I think when I hobby farmed and we had another income that wasn't related to the animals, if I needed to dump $150 into a goat, I had $150 to put into a goat, and it didn't matter if I was going to get $150 back from the goat. And now I have to make decisions based on what's best for our business, and that not necessarily always putting money into a cow that I know that I'm not going to get back in milk. So I stop making those decisions from an emotional place, and I make them from a business place now. But it's not something that we face a lot. We don't push any of our cows for production. I'm not, out there graze, 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 eat, 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 milk, milk, milk. It's just like, yeah, you guys go do your thing and come back here and we'll take what you've got.
Well, and they're going to live longer because of that,
produce.
That's what I always say, is my animals are there for the long haul.
Right.
And I made that commitment in a partnership with them. So I'm not going to push them. I'm going to say, what do you got to give? And we're going to go forward.
Yeah.
Well, how long will a cow, service your needs?
I mean, so a cow is, they're bred to our cows are bred to calf when they're between 2 and 3 years old, is when they have their first calf.
Mm-hmm.
And they milk until they're about 7 months. So they wait a couple months until they're bred again.
You breed them every year, basically?
Essentially every year. Your cows are going to kind of increase in production, hold a plateau for as long as you want, and then begin to decrease. But
right.
The having a calf, the giving birth is what, simulates that new lactation style and allows them to kind of peak again or to mm-hmm. hit a higher level.
Well, if you're breeding every year, I mean, your herd's going to grow exponentially unless you get rid of animals.
Right, unless you sell calves to pay your bills.
Not every calf that's born is a female.
Right, well, I imagine not.
I know sometimes you've had problems with deciding what was male and female, so I just wanted to bring that
up. Makes milking time very exciting, right?
Well, maybe for you.
Not for the cow, that's
No. Well, I just wondered, back to kind of about the film, mm-hmm. is how do you think the film, which is going to air on September the 2nd, how do you think that's going to influence your business?
I hope that it's going to make people feel more connected to us and to feel as they know us better and they know more of what it takes to produce the cheese. I think it's going to air nationally, I want people to like take away or to know that there's people like us doing similar things all the way across the country. Like, just because you saw this picture of the Nolan family here in Southeast Ohio, we're not unique. There's a lot of families mm-hmm. all around the country that are taking, you know, the natural resources that are around them and turning them into something to make a living for their family. A lot of people, I think food is an important thing and an important way that they are doing it, but people are creating or growing food in every state, you know, across every country, and all of the people, everybody's eating food. And I think the closer, I don't know, I just want people to know that there are real people that are doing it, mm-hmm. and they're like you, and they're like me, and they're like everybody that's watching. They're just regular people. We're not just farmers somewhere.
Yeah. We have families. We have a lot of things in common.
Yeah.
Well, the other part of that, though, is I'm wondering, so let's say it's the next day, and now you get, like, all kinds of responses. So do you have some kind of canned...
Not yet.
Okay, you better do that. All right, so Jay's letting us know we're at the end, but what is the best advice you ever received?
I saw that one on the list. I don't know. I've learned so much more from my mistakes and from my experiences than I have from anybody telling me anything. I don't know if
that's good, if
that's personality in my something in my brain, but I definitely I don't remember things people tell me. Yeah.
All right. So you're a stubborn lot. That's a good thing. Way to go, Celeste.
Well, we want to thank you, Celeste. And you have been listening to When the Biomass Hits the Wind Turbine with Jay and Annie Warmke and our guest, the one who listens occasionally, Celeste Nolan, and learns from her mistakes. We'd also like to thank Adam Rich, our award-winning producer. And thank you for spending just a little bit of time with us. And as your grandmother hopefully told you, the secret to a happy and sustainable life is...
play nice with others, clean up your own mess. And Jay, will you please eat your veggies this week?
Till next time. Bye-bye.
Mother Earth will sing and her children will be...
You can find more information on living sustainably in our unsustainable world at BlueRockStation.com.